The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey there, it's Kona Gallagher, host of And Then They Were Gone and Day by Day True Crime Stories, and I'm here to bring you an amazing opportunity to win some incredible prizes, all for a good cause. Join the Texas Advocacy Project's The Big Game Football Squares Raffle on February 9th, 2025, and help support survivors of power-based abuse. For every $100 donation, you secure a square and a chance to win amazing prizes. You can choose from two exciting grids. The Hawaiian Paradise Grid offers a grand prize of a seven-night stay for two at a luxury resort in Oahu or the Big Island. Or play the Beachfront Mexico Grid for a chance to win a four-night, all-inclusive stay for two at a five-star Marival Luxury Resort in Banderas Bay or Nuevo Nayarit, Mexico. Your contributions help survivors understand their rights, navigate the justice system, and secure emergency protective orders. To participate, visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org and select your grid today. Don't miss out. Tune in to the Texas Advocacy Project's Facebook page on February 9th, 2025, during the game for live updates on winners. Prizes are awarded at the end of each quarter with the grand prize at the game's conclusion. So score big for a cause. Visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org to learn more.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
On December 17th, 2022, 19-year-old Caden Black had dinner with the family he was staying with, the Faust family. Their son, Ethan, was one of Caden's best friends, and the family had taken him in after Caden had a fight with his father. Though Caden wasn't living at his father's house, he had plans the next day to go over there to exercise his dogs. But Caden never showed up. When his father, Maurice, couldn't get in touch with him, he called the Fausts. The father, Chris Faust, said that Caden was probably still asleep. But by Tuesday, the teenager was still gone. The months that followed brought an investigation with frustratingly few clues. Did Caden decide to vanish without a trace? Or was his disappearance at the hands of someone else? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Caden Black. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone,
welcome back.
Thank you for joining us for another part two. Now we're actually going to talk about the disappearance of Caden Black because we didn't even get to it last week.
I know there was so much background and build up to it.
Yeah. And so this week we're going to be talking, of course, about the actual disappearance. That's kind of where we're starting off. And then the initial investigation, but then all of the theories and kind of the weirdness that's been happening since then.
Looking forward to getting into it.
Before we get started, though, I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, except in this part. You know a little.
Yeah, I know the background on this.
But you're here to provide your reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones that you have at home. So let's get into part two of the story of Caden Black. So last week, we started telling the story. Caden's a 19-year-old who went missing from Wrightsville, Pennsylvania in December 2022. He had actually just turned 19 on December 10th. Caden had a rough year leading up to his disappearance. He had moved from Maryland with his mother back to his hometown in Pennsylvania to live with his father so that he could attend his previous high school. However, once he got back there, fights and other issues led to him being expelled from that school and then put into an alternative school, where an altercation with a bus driver led to several criminal charges being pressed against him. A later fight with his father led to an involuntary mental health hold. After that, he was taken in by the Faust family, who he knew through their son, Ethan, who had been one of Caden's best friends since middle school. By December 2022, Caden was working toward his GED and had found irregular work at a moving company. According to his mother, he was feeling kind of down at the time, but he was keeping busy and was fixing up his old Toyota 4Runner with Chris Faust, the father. Caden turned 19 on December 10th, and the week after, he made plans with his mom to go down to Maryland for Christmas. But by the next weekend, he would be gone. So here's where we left off. On Sunday, December 18th, Caden had made plans to go over to his dad's house to go run with his dogs. Caden loved his father's pit bulls, but he was concerned that they weren't getting enough exercise.
I guess his father doesn't take them on runs?
No, it doesn't sound like it. So Caden would. He would often go over there and take them out and either like play with them, take them out for walks, or just go on actual runs with them. So when Caden didn't show that day, the Sunday, Maurice called him, but Caden didn't answer. He texted him, but again, nothing. So eventually, Maurice called Chris, and then Chris told him that he hadn't seen Caden that day, but that he was probably still sleeping. Now, I don't know what time Maurice called Chris, but, you know, knowing teenagers, it kind of could have been any time during the day. And yeah, the answer would have likely been he's probably still sleeping.
Yeah. Well, you had also mentioned that he was working for a moving company. And when he would come home, or basically when he wasn't working, he was sleeping or playing video games.
Yeah. So he wasn't working the day before. But yes, you're right. Like oftentimes on his days off, he would stay up like all hours playing video games with Ethan.
Right.
So yeah, it was totally normal for him to just be sleeping. And to that point, Chris has said that it wasn't unusual for them to kind of go a few days without seeing him because their schedules, you know, would just get kind of opposite of each other.
Okay.
This is, however, an odd statement to me a little bit, because again, Caden wasn't going out and staying out all night or anything like that. Like, he was in the house. So to say that you wouldn't see him for a few days, like, I don't know.
Mildly suspicious there.
Like a little bit. It's like a little weird, you know? But Chris was an early riser. So he'd be up by like 5-6 o'clock every morning, and Caden would not. So to an extent, you get it, you know?
Sure, I understand that, but they're, you know, I mean, look, we have teenagers, they're obviously not in that same exact environment, but they do on their days off tend to stay up very late playing video games or doing whatever that they're doing. But, you know, I mean, like at some point they come out of their room.
Yes, and we will talk about that a lot more later. So anyway, so back to the Sunday, right? Maurice continued to call and text his son, but nothing was going through. The calls were going straight to voicemail and the texts were unread. Now, on Tuesday, Maurice called Chris again and got in touch with him. And Chris told him that Caden wasn't there. Maurice said, "What do you mean he isn't there?" They said that they checked his room and he was gone.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure, again, of the exact timeline of this, but Kara says that on Tuesday morning, Chris called her and asked if she knew where Caden was.
Okay, so Chris calls Caden's mom to find out if she knew where he was.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's before Maurice called him on Tuesday or after Maurice called him.
Gotcha. That was what I was trying to clarify.
Yeah, so she said that Chris called her Tuesday morning. But again, I just don't know
who called first.
Who called who? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do know that like those calls were all made Tuesday morning. She, of course, did not know where Caden was, assumed he was at the Faust's home, which is where he was supposed to be. And she later posted on Facebook, quote, "He tells me he hasn't seen him in 3 days. This is where my nightmare begins." A missing persons report was filed with the Lower Windsor Township Police. They've publicly said that they immediately took the call seriously, telling reporters that while Caden was over 18 and could leave if he wanted to, the circumstances were unusual. This little statement came from that article that I've been referencing, that I referenced a lot throughout the first episode, and I feel as though it's a little disingenuous.
Okay.
Because it makes it seem as though police immediately began an investigation upon receiving the report, which, you know, maybe they did to an extent.
At the very least, took it seriously and sent somebody out to talk to somebody?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely did. I just don't know exactly when they sent somebody to the house. But based on the posts on the Find Caden Black Facebook page, they didn't start a search immediately.
Okay.
So the Tuesday that Caden's family realized he was missing was December 20th. The Facebook page was up the next day with a post asking the public for help. It reads in part, quote, "The police department has not issued a press release prompting a news release and interviews. The news media is waiting on this official press release before they report on the disappearance of this teenager. The family wants to be interviewed. They want this on the news, the radio, and circulated on social media. And as of now, they are doing everything on their own, including canvassing neighborhoods and boots on the ground searches," end quote. So basically, while the police department told the newspaper that they took it seriously immediately, from what this sounds like, it sounds as though they treated it like a, we'll say, typical missing teenager case or 18-year-old plus case, meaning that they were kind of waiting a little bit to see if he just came home because they didn't immediately put out a press release. And because of that, and because, again, we've said this time and time again, 99% of missing persons cases are solved very quickly, news media will wait for like an official press release from police saying right. that, yes, this is actually a missing person
yeah.
before they start covering it. 2 days into it, again, we're not talking weeks. Like we're talking, you know, yes, he hasn't been seen since Saturday, but this is really only 2 days since the police have known about this. They haven't released the press release and kind of nothing is really happening on an official level at this point.
But from that post, it almost sounds like how did the media find out about it? Was it through the family or?
Well, so on that post was on December 21st. The media had not found out about it yet. So this was solely the Facebook page that the family put up. They were just asking anybody to help them out and to, you know, do whatever they could to help get the word out because the media couldn't get involved yet until they had the official press release. Now, that press release apparently happened soon afterwards as WGAL Channel 8 put out the word about Caden on December 23rd. And so on that Facebook page, that was like the first news story that they noted. They're like, okay, we've hit the news. We're going.
Gotcha. Yeah, it sounds like the police are dragging their feet, maybe in hopes that he comes back, or maybe...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the size of Lower Windsor Police Department, so maybe they were reaching out for resources? I don't know.
No, I think it's more of the former, because I think they were thinking, okay, this might, you know, resolve itself. But while they weren't making this public, it sounds as though they were, like you said, you know, going to the house, interviewing people, kind of doing things like that.
Doing things in the background.
Right, but
not doing a full court press
Yeah, exactly. Because by the 23rd, once they put out the press release and the news media started picking it up, the police had figured out that his phone, that Keaton's phone, had last pinged within about 2 to 3 miles of his house on Old Common Road near Rexroth Park. So in addition to searching the Faust home, Keaton's family desperately wanted that area searched.
Yeah.
And on December 28th, they took to Facebook once again, asking for help coordinating a large-scale ground search.
So at this point, the police still haven't done any kind of searches?
No. I mean, again, I think they've been to the house, but no, in terms of like a ground search of the area, that had not been done officially.
Interesting. I wonder why they're doing that.
Well, I don't know. And that was a big thing on the Facebook page. So if you like scroll back to the very beginning, there are many, many posts, many, many comments saying like, they're not doing this. They need the DA's office to sign off on it. Like all this kind of stuff.
But, the DA doesn't get involved in a search at this level.
No, I know. That's a whole other thing because that's apparently what Keaton's family was told. And then some other people were like messaged the DA personally on Facebook and was like, hey, can you authorize the search?
And the DA was like, that has nothing to do with my office.
That's basically what he said. But then when they actually did do the search, there was a representative from the DA's office there. And so whatever. But like, it doesn't matter. The point is that a formal search wasn't planned. The police were discouraging citizens from, you know, planning searches because they didn't want all these people going on private property. Because where he disappeared from, like, wasn't the middle of the woods or whatever. It was like a neighborhood. So they were afraid that all these people were going to be like going onto properties and causing problems. So it was just a whole thing for about, you know, a week or two where the family's like, we need to get boots on the ground. We need to have searches. The police weren't doing it. And the family and friends and everybody wanted it done. So there was a lot of like tension there at the beginning around that.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand it. I mean, if the police are know that this search is going to take place and they're getting pressure from the family to do these searches, they're going to the extent of saying, don't do the searches yourselves, but we're also not going to do it. Why?
Right. Well, and that's the frustration that the family was feeling, you know? While police hadn't conducted a ground search at this point, they had reportedly searched Caden's room at the Faust home, as well as Maurice's home. Now, no clues to Caden's whereabouts were found at Maurice's, and searching his room at the Faust home showed that Caden hadn't taken any belongings with him. The only things missing were his shoes, his cell phone, and his wallet.
And presumably whatever clothes he had on?
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it didn't appear that he had packed anything.
Was it common for him? And I don't know geographically where the Faust family is to his father's father's house. Would it be common for him to, said he's an active kid, like to walk to his dad's house?
No, I mean, like
play
I
with
said,
the dogs,
he would like to. He would run, and he was athletic, and he would ride his bike and stuff. But I think when it came to things like that, he would just borrow one of the cars because Chris Faust liked to work on cars. I mean, they had multiple cars at that home. So yeah, he would have just taken a car usually.
Just eliminating possibilities.
Yeah. So inside his room at the Faust house, police also found alcohol, handwritten rap lyrics that mentioned a girl, and a homemade Ouija board.
Okay.
So, yeah, like...
like standard teenage
Random teenage stuff. But yeah, no clues as to where he could have gone. Now, it wasn't until January 2nd, 2023, that an official search for Caden actually took place.
That's a long time.
It is, yeah.
A lot of potential evidence could have been lost.
Yep. And again, they had been to the house and they searched Caden's room. I don't know if they searched the rest of the house. I don't know if they searched the property. I don't know if they searched like, or like how thoroughly anything else was searched or if they just went to Caden's room and kind of took a look around.
Yeah.
So anyway, on this January 2nd search, it was led by Lower Windsor PD and was assisted by Search 93, East Prospect Fire Number 42, and PAXAR with one canine. They also sent out a drone to search the area between the house and the Susquehanna River, which is about 2 miles away. Now, in between the house and the river, it's a lot of residential neighborhoods and a large church. So I had to get on Google Maps. I had to get on the satellite view of this because what I was reading said that they sent out a drone to search the rugged terrain between the house and the church. And all I was seeing was neighborhoods. I was like, what rugged terrain are we talking about? But there is a pretty substantial wooded area kind of between. It's not directly across, but it's kind of between, and it's where the Canadockley Creek is. So the Canadockley Creek is running through this wooded area and it leads to the river.
Okay.
But yeah, so that search turned up nothing. One clue that was discovered about a week into the investigation was more specific information about where Caden's phone had been. Remember how I said it pinged a few miles away from his home? Well, there are two cell towers within a 1 to 3 mile range of the Faust home. The one on which it pinged on Old Commons Road is the further of the two, but it's not uncommon for phones to bounce around nearby cell towers based on availability and other factors. And I say this because police later determined that Keaton's phone was actually connected to the Faust's home Wi-Fi. Until 9:33 Sunday morning.
Oh, interesting.
At which point it either died or was turned off. So it never connected or pinged after 9:33 a.m. on Sunday.
But you said it pinged it at that other cell phone tower.
So basically the first thing that police were able to do was to get the cell phone pings. And so they found the cell phone tower. When they were able to get all of his phone records, then they were able to clone his phone and find out more detailed information, including the fact that it was connected to the Wi-Fi until 9:33 a.m. They were also able to access text messages, location data, all of that kind of stuff. And nothing came up after 9:33 a.m. on Sunday. But the phone was missing.
Wow. Okay.
So the ping did not mean that Caden's phone was 2 miles away, by this park, as everybody initially thought. It was at home, connected to the Wi-Fi, and then pinging off that nearby cell tower. Police brought in electronic sniffing dogs in hopes of recovering the cell phone, but they turned up nothing. Police initially did not suspect foul play in Caden's disappearance. They believe that he was a disturbed individual who decided to leave on his own. And that's why I spent so much time talking about the events that led up to his disappearance, because I think it really shaped not only why he may have disappeared, but how his disappearance was treated. Caden's family admitted that this could be a possibility that he decided to leave.
Sure, but it seems rather strange to not take anything.
Right.
Take your cell phone, but either turn it off or remove the SIM card and, I guess, break the SIM card or throw it away or whatever. Do you know what I mean? That seems like an extra step that is just a little odd.
Well, yeah, and that's what they thought, too, because they're like, it doesn't make sense. He didn't pack a bag, you know? He didn't take one of, the five cars that were there. He didn't.
Now we've covered cases where people have legitimately left everything behind and disappeared and started a whole new life. We've covered cases like that, but none of them have ever turned off their cell phone, but taken it with them.
Yeah. Beyond that, Caden, yes, he had a history of different issues, but he had never run away. Mm-hmm. He had never broken contact with his family before. All of this was very out of character for him. And then that combined with the fact that he had no vehicle, no extra clothes, and his bank card, which presumably was with him because his wallet was gone, it hadn't been used. So it made them highly doubtful that he decided to just take off.
Yeah.
If you go back to the beginning of the Find Caden Black Facebook page, you can see the evolution of the family's thoughts and feelings on this case. The early posts, I've kind of talked about already, are frantic. They're begging for help. They're urging police to do more. after a few weeks go by, they become sadder and, you know, grateful for all of the support. Support that apparently came from the Faust family, among others. On January 11th, an admin posted in part, quote, "Multiple people have reached out through different forums asking if or suggesting that the Faust family, who Caden was living with at the time of his disappearance, could have done something to hurt him. The Faust family has never been anything other than supportive of Caden, and they have been forthcoming, helpful, and cooperative in the search for him," end quote.
I mean, sure, but you can't, like, ignore the evidence. Last known location was in his bedroom at the Faust family at 9:30 in the morning. Well, at least that was the last known location of the cell
phone. Right. He was last seen going into his bedroom the previous evening, about 12 hours prior to that.
Right.
As the months went on, the family posted regular updates and, you know, memories and pictures and things like that of Caden. By the 5-month mark, the investigation was still going on behind the scenes, but there were no new leads. This continued for the next several months. The emotional tide began to turn in September with the publishing of the York Daily Record article that I've been mentioning throughout this episode. Kara was not happy with it. We've already covered some of what she didn't like about the article, but in a long Facebook post full of corrections, she kind of starts to go after the Fausts for the first time publicly, saying, quote, "While we understand the Fausts feeling hurt by the accusations from the public, they need to understand that as the last people to see Caden, they will always be under question until he is found, especially since there is no Ring camera footage of him leaving the home and his phone last pinged there," end quote.
Ah, so they had a Ring camera on the front door.
Well, so this, I haven't gotten a definitive answer to, but I'll talk about that more in a minute. But yes, there's a specific reason why she brings that up.
Okay.
Now, early missing posters for Caden featured both Chris and Kara's phone numbers on them for people to call in with any information. But that newspaper article said that Chris asked for his to be taken off after receiving crank calls. According to Kara, however, she was the one receiving those calls, and she's the one who requested his number be removed after discovering that Caden's phone pinged at their house on Sunday morning, but that the phone was still missing. But yes, let's get to that Ring footage. One of the first things that police and Caden's family did was ask people in the area to check their doorbell camera footage for any sign of Caden Saturday night or Sunday, but nothing was found. Now, it does sound as though this includes Faust's own Ring doorbell camera, but I'm not 100% sure that they had one at the time of Caden's disappearance. I think they did, but I can't swear to that fact. We do know, however, that they had one a few months later. Apparently, there were some like vandals or car thieves or something around the neighborhood, right? So they're like kids or people, whoever, trying to do something with people's cars.
Perhaps lawnmower thieves.
Yeah, who knows? And one of the Faust's neighbors tagged Chris and another neighbor in a Facebook post thanking them for providing footage of these people. And that post included screenshots. So it included screenshots from a Ring camera that belonged to Chris and a Wyze camera that belonged to the other neighbor.
So there's multiple angles, it sounds like, that the police have seen. Ring camera, doorbell cameras, whatever you want to call them, throughout the neighborhood. And the police haven't said anything about seeing Caden that Saturday night or the Sunday morning on any of the footage.
Nope.
So he just goes to his room Saturday night and then completely disappears by Sunday morning.
Yeah. In addition to that, the timeline is incredibly strange to me. The Fausts say that the last time they saw Caden was Saturday evening. Then, according to Kara, Chris told her that he was up by 5 or 6 on Sunday morning and didn't hear or see Caden. So this was like the first conversation that she had with him, probably on Tuesday, you know?
Yeah.
Where she's like trying to figure out like what the hell he's talking about when he's calling her saying, hey, do you know where Caden is? So he's like, yeah, you know, I get up early. I get up 5 or 6. Didn't hear him. Didn't see him. I don't know. Haven't seen him since.
Right. But his phone pings at 9. So
9:33. Yeah, exactly. Which Kara didn't know at the time.
Sure. Yeah.
Of course. Right.
Yeah.
So she's just like, okay, so you're up at 5 or 6. You didn't hear him. Like, what? Okay.
Yeah.
But then when she finds out a week or so later that his phone was pinging until 9:33 and then mysteriously turned off and then disappeared.
Right. Like, okay, Chris, where were you at 9:33 in the morning?
Yeah. So what about the rest of the family, though? You know, it's a Sunday. It's 9:33 in the morning. What about anyone else?
Yeah. And well, so, I mean, I guess Ethan would be 19 as well.
Yeah, so I'm sure he heard or saw nothing, regardless.
Yeah, and who knows? Like, we don't know what he's even doing.
No.
Is he in school? Is he working? Like, nobody knows.
I don't know.
Right? So we eliminate him because he's also a teenager and probably was asleep also. But
yeah, so there's Kara, also a younger sister, Josie.
Okay.
Who was in high school at the time.
So she'd be home.
Yeah, presumably. I mean, I don't know that for sure. But yeah, and then there's Chris's wife too. So like there are a lot of people
right
in this family, in this house, but apparently nobody heard or saw Caden
leaving.
Right. At any point.
At any point.
And so, yes. So this is probably a good time to talk about the house itself.
Okay.
This is not a large house. This is not a house in the middle of the woods. According to property records, it's a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath, split foyer home with a total finished size of 1,520 square feet.
That is a small house. Those bedrooms have to be tiny.
Yep. When you walk in, there's about 6 steps going up to the main level and about 6 steps going down to the lower level. The basement level has 480 finished square feet and a sliding glass door that leads out to the backyard. The main level has 3 bedrooms and 1.5 bathrooms over 1,040 square feet, with all 3 bedrooms on the same side of the house. According to reports, Caden's bedroom was on the main level, so that leaves 2 other bedrooms. These rooms aren't large, as you said, so I doubt the Fausts made Ethan and his sister double up so that Caden could have his own room.
Right.
Ethan is older, so if I had to guess, I would think that Caden was given Ethan's old room and Ethan moved down to the family room in the basement and used that as his bedroom.
That would make sense.
Right. So I don't know that for sure. That's just my supposition based on the layout of the house and based on the fact that they said Caden's room was upstairs.
Right. Well, who said Caden's room was upstairs?
That was in the newspaper article.
That was in, okay. Yeah. Cause I was going to say that earlier you had said that Chris had said that they painted a room for him.
Exactly. That's the other thing. So that's another reason why I'm kind of thinking it was like Ethan's old room.
Yeah.
So they painted it, because I feel like if it were a guest room or something around along those lines, you wouldn't necessarily have to repaint it, right? Like, yeah, it would be kind of ready for somebody to just move into.
Well, even if it was Josie's room that they repainted and Josie was downstairs in the family room, that's where the sliding glass door is, right? That leads out the back. Mm-hmm. So if he had gone out through her bedroom, she would have seen him.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You're exactly right. So I don't know if there were cameras in the back of the house, but
probably not.
You're right. You would have to go through whoever's bedroom that is in the basement to get out that way.
Right.
So unless they're not home at the time, that's kind of hard to do.
Unless there's another bedroom in the basement separate from the family room.
No, there's only 480 finished square feet and it's not an actual bedroom down there.
It's just a room.
It's just a room. Okay. It's just like an open room. You've kind of talked about how we have 2 teenagers who also like to hole up in their rooms. But when they do that, even though we may not physically see them for many hours on end, we know that they're here. We will hear them in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Or we hear them go down to the kitchen.
Right.
And our house is larger than the house in this story that we're talking about, right? So I find it hard to believe that between Saturday night and Tuesday morning, no one in that house noticed that they hadn't heard a peep from Caden, especially after his father called on Sunday looking for him.
Right.
Like, to me, if the dad's calling at like 9 a.m. or something silly like that, and, you know, you would say like, yeah, he's probably still sleeping, whatever.
Yeah.
But if he's calling later, if he's calling at like 11 or 12 or, you know, whatever, you would say, yeah, he's probably still sleeping. But I feel like at that point you go in and check and be like, hey, knock, knock. Your dad's on the phone. He's wondering where you are.
Yeah. I mean, even if it, regardless of what time
yeah.
his father calls, like, you're at the house all day. This guy's probably out working on his car, Chris. Mm-hmm. The rest of the family is doing whatever around the house. Like, at some point, knowing that his father called and he had had plans with his father, at some point, you're going to be like, I wonder if Caden ever, I hadn't seen him come out of his room. Like,
right.
At some point, you're going to be like, I wonder if maybe I should go find out if Caden, like, went over to his dad's. Did I miss him? Like, let me go knock on his door.
Yeah, go knock on his door. You haven't heard him in the bathroom. You haven't heard him in the kitchen. Like,
right. It seems very odd to just blanket say it was not uncommon for us to not see him for several days. Like,
yeah.
That's bullshit. Like, I'm sorry. That's, you don't not know whether somebody's home in a
1500 square foot house.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a thing.
Right. With no private entrance or exit for that person.
And you're all sharing the same shower. There is one shower in that house.
Right.
Like, no. And again, we don't know exactly what the family was doing that weekend, you know, on Sunday or whatever. But on Monday, December 19th, Chris posted on Facebook about having to dig through the trash to find a screw and then posted a photo of like this tiny little screw that he found in the trash.
Yeah. So he was putzing around the house.
Right. Again, that's what it sounds on Monday. Like. And again, I don't know for sure that this screw in the trash was at his house, but I mean, it would stand to reason.
I mean, who else? Who?
I don't know.
Like, what other trash are you going through to find a screw?
Right. So if he was home on Monday digging through the trash, like, it still didn't occur to him that the troubled teen he had taken in had been seen or heard from in 2 days.
Or anybody else in the house.
Yeah. And again, you know, maybe everybody else is gone. I don't know what their deal is. But Maurice also said that he had been trying to reach Chris again. Like, I don't know if he was calling or texting or whatever. Like, between the time that he talked to him on Sunday and Tuesday when he eventually talked to him again. I mean, it would stand to reason again when Caden never showed up and he couldn't get a hold of his son that he would call Chris again and be like, hey,
can you go knock on his door? Because right? I haven't heard from him either.
Yeah, but according to Maurice, he never got a hold of Chris again until Tuesday. So but Chris was like putzing around looking for screws posted on Facebook.
So we've got all day Sunday, essentially, yeah. and all day Monday.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, can anybody account for Chris's whereabouts during those times?
Again, who knows what the police...
What the police have found out.
Yeah, we can't say. I mean, I don't want to say that, like...
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, as you can imagine, people started pointing fingers at the Fouts almost immediately. But the accusations really intensified after Caden's family started kind of speaking out against them a little bit. In addition to the way the Fausts portrayed themselves in that newspaper article, which we talked about in the first episode, with all the white savior stuff that I particularly did not enjoy, it also came out that Chris had sold Caden's 4Runner on Facebook Marketplace over the summer, so about 6 months after Caden was last seen. Caden went missing December 2022, and then the next summer in 2023, Chris sold the 4Runner on Facebook Marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
In the ad, which you can still find, he says that he completely rebuilt the engine, among many other things. He also states that he spent over $10,000 on the project. Despite this, he listed it for $9,700 and ended up selling it for just $8,500.
Trying to get rid of some evidence, perhaps?
I mean, that's what everybody thinks, right? Like, so that's the thing that people have been posting and reposting and be like, all right, this is shady as hell. Beyond, like, okay, even if you set that aside, right, and take it completely, like, innocently, like, I don't know.
I don't know how you would take it innocently, considering it wasn't actually his car.
Well, technically, it was legally in his name.
I understand that, but, like, you know, Caden's mom gave it to him for Caden.
Yeah.
And now this dude's selling it.
Right.
After Caden goes missing.
Yeah. So Kara, Caden's mom, was heartbroken when she learned about this sale. She had wanted the 4Runner back, you know, saying that it kind of could have been her spot where she, like, went to think about Caden. And, you know, when she posted this, she's like, I know maybe this sounds dumb or whatever, but, like, you know, and
look, she's a grieving mother. Like,
exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. If you want this car, like, to go sit in, like, take the car and go sit in it. A lot of posts have been deleted on Facebook, you know, between the Fausts and Caden's family. And according to Chris, the family blocked him. According to the family, Chris blocked them. So I don't know, but regardless, like, there's a lot of stuff missing.
Yeah.
So some of this I'm only kind of hearing about second or third hand. But Chris apparently posted, you know, at some point somewhere that he had offered to sell it to Kara for $7,000 and then later said that he had offered to give it to her for free, but that Kara had told him to just keep it.
And what does Kara say in response to that?
That Chris never spoke to her about the 4Runner at all.
Yeah, sounds about right.
That none of those conversations ever happened. Now, Chris is a prolific Facebook marketplace seller, and two posts prior to the 4Runner is a listing for a full-size bed, which he said was only used for 3 months. If you look at Chris's public Facebook page, you won't see any posts about Caden's disappearance in December or January or February of 2022 and 2023. Now, that's not because I don't think he posted anything.
He just didn't make them public.
Or I think either that or he deleted them. Because again, there were a lot of accusations that started flying around. And Chris has a lot of public Facebook posts. And of course, those would have been public because, you know, what's the point of posting about a missing person and making it private? So what I think happened is that once kind of the people on Facebook and elsewhere started to turn against him after he sold the 4Runner and all this other stuff, that they probably went to those posts and kind of started saying a lot of things. So my guess is that he deleted that. By the time that newspaper article came out, I think Chris was kind of tired of defending himself. For instance, at the end of December of 2022, so we're talking, like, you know, a week after Caden goes missing, Chris posted a photo of his garage floor on Facebook and asked if anyone else's epoxy had cracked due to the cold weather. This led to all sorts of rumors about them digging up their garage floor and burying Caden underneath. I even came across a comment that said that he had poured a new concrete pad shortly after Caden's disappearance. This appears to be based on nothing, really. Like, There's no evidence of that whatsoever. People also pointed to another Facebook photo of Chris's, like, kind of bruised and bloody knuckles after he had been working on a car, like, 2 months after Caden's disappearance.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're working on a car, you're going to get bruised and bloody knuckles. It doesn't matter what.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Right. And so people were, like, really kind of seizing, you know, these little things as, like, pieces of evidence. So I understand why Chris may have deleted some posts. Mm-hmm. Right. In September 2023, around the time that article was published, Chris posted a defense in a neighborhood Facebook group. And now, again, because it's a neighborhood Facebook group, it's a private group, like, I can't get into it. So I do not have the context of why he was posting this in a neighborhood Facebook group. I only have a partial screenshot, which, you know, we'll post on our blog. But in my opinion, from what I can see of it, like, it doesn't really do him any favors. One of Kara's complaints with that newspaper article is the way it portrayed Caden. She said, quote, "We believe painting Caden as just another troubled black teen is a harmful and irresponsible narrative perpetuating racial stereotypes," end quote, which I completely 100% agree with.
Yeah.
Again, especially coming from a town, which we mentioned in the first episode, has a 2% black population. So in this post that Chris posted in the neighborhood group, it starts off saying, quote, "The information about to be released is not in any way to besmirch Caden. The information is of importance for the most plausible scenario to have possibly occurred," end quote. So, like, it's already not starting out great. You know, if you start out, this isn't intended to besmirch Caden, like, I'm already not liking where you're coming from.
Yeah, it already puts the reader on the defensive.
Yeah. He then goes on to say, quote, "A teenager who was a 4.0 student, well-behaved, having few friends, and leaving the house one evening never to return, would likely have different scenarios for disappearance than a teenager who had behavioral problems, being expelled from public schools, having police intervention many times, doing drugs, and threatening to harm oneself," end quote.
Doing drugs?
Yeah, I don't know.
Where did that come from?
No idea. It's the only time I've ever seen anything about that.
Okay.
And, you know, again, I don't know what Caden was doing with his free time. He lived with him. Maybe he does know something. But that has never been mentioned anywhere.
Right. And basically him saying this is a way to take the focus off of him and say, oh, well, he was a troubled teen.
What do you expect?
This is going to happen.
Exactly.
Ridiculous.
He then goes on to talk about the bus incident, which he says involved a, quote, "physical altercation with an elderly male driver who was over 70 years old," end quote.
Okay.
And again, I have no idea who the bus driver is. I don't know if that's true or false. It may be true, but that was never mentioned before. But he made sure to make Caden look even worse.
Right.
By saying that he, like, beat up a senior citizen.
Right. Which we don't know whether that's true or not. And he also didn't give any context about what happened on the actual bus.
Yeah. Again, I mean, I'm not saying everything that he wrote, but yeah, he doesn't give, like, a lot of context. He just basically says that
Caden beat up an old white guy.
Yeah, for the most part. Well, I don't know if it's a white guy, but okay, whatever, an old guy.
Whatever.
He then goes on to paint himself as the savior yet again, saying, quote, "I visited Caden almost every day for 2 to 5 hours, purchasing him magazines, talking philosophical and theological points of religion, and just spending time together, which was noticeably changing him, and the hospital staff was thankful. We even had friends in there looking over him, and one would sneak him up an extra burger at times," end quote.
What is the point of him saying any of this on a neighborhood Facebook group?
I don't know. Trying to say, like, hey, I'm the good guy. He was a troubled teen. I couldn't have anything to do with this. He brought this on himself, whatever it is. It's just so self-aggrandizing, again, which I talked about in the first episode.
Yeah.
And it goes on from there, including him saying that they spent around $800 on phone calls while Caden was in prison.
Oh, wow. Now we're monetizing how good of a human being they are.
Oh, there's a lot of monetization of it. Talking about how much he spent on the Forerunner and, like, all kinds of stuff like that. Yes, that is also a recurring theme.
Clearly, he was doing this out of the goodness of his own heart.
Yeah, it's just so gross. But none of it, of course, makes Chris Faust a murderer.
No, it's not incriminating in any way.
No, it just makes him a guy who really, really rubs me the wrong way. He also posts a weirdly high number of anti-trans memes on Facebook. Like, a weirdly high number.
Okay, I mean,
and it doesn't have anything to do with this. It's just another thing that, like, I was going through and I'm like, why? Why so many? This is so weird and so gross.
I don't know. I don't know what to do with that.
I don't know. It's just very off-putting is all I'm saying. Now, with all of that, we've gone through the background of Caden. We've talked about the sketchiness of the Fausts. We've talked about his legal troubles, you know, all of it. So now let's talk about what actually could have happened to Caden Black. Since we've been talking about the Faust family, let's just go ahead and start there. As we've mentioned, and as many people have pointed out, they were the last people to see Caden. Their timeline, sketchy as hell.
Yep, definitely does not make sense.
Nope. They smeared both Caden's name and his family publicly after his disappearance. They sold his belongings as if they knew he wasn't coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the motive?
Right, that would be my question.
Yeah, because I do genuinely believe that Chris liked Caden and that he did offer to take him in with mostly altruistic intentions.
Sure, he definitely wanted some attention, not attention, but like...
Yeah, I think he just wanted to be known as this like great guy who took in this troubled teen out of the goodness of his heart. You know, I think there was something in it for him in that way of having people kind of look at him like that.
Why murder him?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like, what does he get out of that?
No. And that's the thing. I can't come up with any motive for that. In a post about the first vigil that Kara planned for Caden, Chris said that he was trying to word the post carefully so as to not step on Caden's family's toes or to offend his son. But he said that Caden meant a lot to him. He said they were similar people who enjoyed the same activities and that he enjoyed being around him. And I absolutely believe that because, again, I get the impression that, you know, I've talked about how Chris is like very active and outdoorsy and works out. I think his son is very much like an indoor kid and doesn't do any of that.
Right.
So having Caden around, he really had somebody to kind of do all those things that he liked to do. I mean, I really do get what he is saying there. This is like one of the only times I've actually empathized with this guy because it is awkward, right? When you do care about somebody, but you don't want to like make it appear as though you're taking the place of the family, which is very different from how he portrayed himself in that newspaper article. But and you also don't want to seem like you care about this person more than your own child. And yeah, I mean, I get that. Like, I totally get what he's saying there. And I believe it, you know? Like, I read that post. I'm like, okay, I get where you're coming from. This makes sense to me. And I think Caden's family believed it too, that Chris Faust like truly did care about Caden. In the first weeks and months of the investigation, they had nothing but praise for the Faust family, both what they did for Caden and how they were helping after his disappearance. And that's coming from multiple people. It's coming from Kara. It's coming from Maurice. It's coming from Kara's husband, Caden's stepfather. Like, I saw posts from all of these people praising the Faust family in, you know, December and January. And obviously, we get why that relationship eventually soured. Not only is it, you know, just the weirdness of the timeline and the phone and all the shit he started saying publicly, but I think beyond that, on a very basic level, what we see in these cases is when a family goes for such a long time without their loved one being found, they naturally look for someone to blame.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that in this case, blaming the Faust family made a lot of sense to them.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me, too.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Just looking at the timeline and the whole set of circumstances around it, like we said, it doesn't make any sense for them to have murdered him, but I don't know. There's something missing there.
There is something, and I don't know what that is, right? But, you know, so in addition of not having any motive that we can see, you've also got to consider the logistics. The Faust home, as I mentioned, is in a suburban neighborhood. It's not in the middle of the woods. And what's more is it's in one of those suburban neighborhoods where people seem to know each other.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of nosy from what it looks like, right? So the houses are close together. The lots are about a quarter of an acre. So if somebody is dragging out a body or burying one under the floor of their garage, it's likely that somebody would see something.
Right.
The police also didn't note that anything was out of place when they went into the house shortly after Keaton's disappearance. So, yes, there is something there. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know how to weigh that against the fact that there is seemingly no motive. The logistics of it don't make any sense. You know, it's certainly not one of those cases where you go through and you're like, okay, I think we know what happened here, you know, as sad as it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't get that feeling here. So let's talk about another option.
Okay.
Option two is the one that most people initially assumed, that Keaton had left on his own, possibly to avoid going back to prison.
Possibly being helped by Chris?
Right. And that was...
And maybe that's where the sketchiness of the timeline and the something that we're looking for that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and that's been thrown around as well as a possibility for sure. So yeah, you know, Keaton did have a lot of serious charges looming over his head, and he told several people that he never wanted to go back to prison, which, yeah, you know, fair, like most people wouldn't. But Kara says that Caden's lawyer was confident he was going to get off on the charges based on that surveillance video of the bus altercation. Beyond that, Keaton deposited his paycheck instead of cashing it.
Right. So he had no cash that we know of.
Well, yeah, exactly. And he also knew that his mother was giving him money for Christmas. So why not wait for that before he left? So if he's like literally planning on running away to avoid this trial and a possible guilty verdict, et cetera, why go then? You know, why go on December 18th and not take your paycheck and not just wait another week and like say goodbye to your family and get the money that your mom was going to give you and, you know, all of that, right? I mean, again, just logistically, not even to mention emotionally, like not saying goodbye to your family who you love. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, mm-hmm. Why leave on foot? Why not take the car? Like any of it. And, you know, if it wasn't necessarily to run away from the charges, as if he just like wanted another change, There were other places he could go. He didn't have to just disappear. You know, he was the middle kid. He has an older brother who was 23 and not living at home. And I don't know exactly what his situation was, but maybe he could have gone there. Like, there were other options for him.
Right. I mean, not to mention his mother.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, he had already said he didn't want to move to Maryland. But again, it's not a reason to just cut off contact with everybody and run off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And nothing in Caden's character would lead anyone to believe that he would just cut off ties like that. On September 24th, 2023, Kara made another post in which she laid out all of the facts of Caden's case as she knew them. And we've talked about most of that. And in her mind, the two options are that he ran away or that someone harmed him. Of course, there's a third option, though.
Suicide?
Yeah. Whether or not Caden made the social media post saying he was going to take a bunch of pills, as Chris alleges, or if he actually told police he was going to kill himself, as the newspaper article says, Caden was struggling. His actions and his father's fiance's belief that he was a danger to himself was enough to get him placed on an involuntary hold. And I know people think that that's like a super easy thing and you just call up and have anybody placed on an involuntary hold, but like, it's truly not that easy.
Like, if you make self-harming statements to a police officer, then they can pretty easily get you.
Right. But if I were to call the police right now and say, hey, he's acting crazy.
No, that's not. It has to be direct.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it
right?
has to be direct statements to an official of some sort.
Yeah. Or there just has to be other evidence or just right. something. Like yeah. there has to be something, right? You can't just call them up and have them take somebody away. And so whatever was going on with Caden, whether he directly said it, you know, in the ways that people have said or not, there was enough going on that you cannot rule this out as a possibility.
But if that's the case, where's his body?
Exactly. As of this recording, he's been missing for about 15 months and his body hasn't been found. Now, I mentioned earlier that the Faust home was near the Susquehanna River. This river is one of the longest rivers on the eastern seaboard, at over 400 miles long. If Caden did take his own life, he couldn't hide his own body. However, if he ended up in the river, there were still hundreds of miles of it that flowed downstream from Wrightsville into Maryland. The problem with that theory is that, again, not to be morbid, but bodies are pulled out of the Susquehanna pretty frequently. I just did a very quick Google search because I was trying really hard to finish this and not to go down a whole other rabbit hole. But bodies have been recovered from the river in March of 2024, just about 2 or so weeks before this recording, February 2024, December 2023, August 2023. In June 2023. There are more. I think there was a February 2023. I had to stop looking after that, right?
Yeah. It's also important to note that the river, like most rivers, it's not like, think about the biggest river that you can imagine. It's not like it's that size the entire length of the river. It narrows, it goes, there's deep ends of it, there's shallower ends of it. You know, so it's not like
there are obstacles.
There's possible dams, probably not on the Susquehanna, but well, actually, maybe because that's like a big power source for the Eastern Seaboard.
Oh, yeah.
So there's all of these things in the way before it makes it to the Chesapeake Bay.
Right.
Like it's not like you jump in Wilkes-Barre, PA, and then end up, you know, hundreds of miles into the Chesapeake Bay and then make it out into the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it should be noted, too, that the body that was found in August 2023 was found in York County, the same county from which Caden went missing. So people aren't typically jumping in the river and then never being seen again.
Right.
In addition to that, you also have the same problem, which is no cameras caught Caden leaving the house or walking the 2 miles from the house to the river.
Right. And we've already talked about the obstacles from him getting from his bedroom out of the house.
Yeah.
Out of the back door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, out of the back door, out of the front door, out of any door. And I mean, even if you did get out of the back door and like went through the yard, I mean, there's still a ton of houses around.
Right. So other people's cameras would have picked.
Exactly.
Up.
Like the house doesn't back into the woods or anything like that. It backs into somebody else's backyard.
Yeah.
The fact is, we don't know where Caden Black is or what happened to him on December 17th or December 18th of 2022. What we do know is that his family dearly misses him, and they've been in their own private hell ever since. Kara wrote a Facebook post on March 12th, 2024, that sums up the grief that a lot of parents of missing children feel. She says, quote, "I dream about you, Caden. You're my heart. I never imagined my life without you in it. It's unnatural. You're my son. You are always meant to be here with me, but you're not. I don't know where you are. I don't think you're alive. How could you be? You wouldn't not call us, reach out, let us know you're okay. It's a nightmare that I live every single day. I had to go to Hanover today. I drove by our old house. I could imagine you there riding your bike, hanging out with all your friends in the neighborhood. But those are just memories. You aren't here. Just a memory of you, your ghost. I hate going to Hanover now. It takes me to a dark place, one where you once existed. A place I wish I could go back to. Tucking you in at night, getting you ready for school, eating dinner with you. Memories that were once cherished parts of your childhood are now just filled with pain. When you were 9 years old, I never knew I only had 9 more years with you until our lives would be plunged into a depth of disparity. Not knowing where you are, if you're alive, believing that you're not. How do you live like this? Why did this happen to my son? How is this real? Where's Caden Black? Will I ever have answers? Will I live this nightmare for the rest of my life?" End quote. Caden's family has a GoFundMe to hire a private investigator. We'll post the link in our show notes. Please take a look and donate if you're able, or share if you're not. Thank you. Caden Black has been missing from York County, Pennsylvania since December 18, 2022. He is a biracial male with brown hair and brown eyes. He was approximately 5'10" and 160 pounds at the time of his disappearance. Caden was 19 when he went missing. He would be 20 today. Anyone with information regarding Caden Black's disappearance is asked to call the Lower Windsor Township Police Department at 717-244-8055 or Crime Stoppers of Pennsylvania at 1-800-THE-LOST. You can also submit a tip anonymously online at york.crimewatchpa.com/LowerWindsorTWPPD. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.